This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey.
Chapter 55. The transit was brief, and only Tom was truly prepared for the sudden dislocation. Sitting there in the cavern, the dreamers opened their eyes at the same time. The hiss of the lamp vanished, the chairs, the pull at their feet, the straps at their wrists and ankles, all plunged backwards and down. Tom prayed he'd got it right. Too short and they'd be buried underground. Too long and they could find themselves thousands of feet in the air. He did not navigate the route in terms of time, but pictured where he wanted to be, brought the place to focus as he grabbed the girl, and some part of him, as instinctive and invisible as a mechanism of his beating heart, set the sphere, calculated the temporal coordinates, and launched the journey into being. For such a short trip, he prayed the swirling walls would protect Catriona from harm. Hopping between brief gaps in time, they touched nothing and nothing touched them. A span of seconds split to an infinite string of tiny jumps, each a frozen instant of zero, threaded to a smooth curve measured in moments and not years. The cavern plummeted, walls and roof like wisps of thought fled them. And then they were outside. Everything fast, no room for error, a thousand ways to die. Silas, continuing to break from the circuit, pulled his hand free as the earth rotated and stopped. The ruin, Cregan, a single light glowing through the window, the faint wash of white surf at the water's edge, the sea itself. And for the briefest instant, in the transition between the imaginary time and the world they lived in, the trio seemed to hang over the water as though catching gravity by surprise. And then, suddenly snatched, they fell, the savage pull of earth absolute and ruthless. Tom kicked out at Silas, missing his head and smashing his shoulder. Catriona, her hand now loosely taped to his, cried in sudden fright. Kicking out thus, the boy pushed himself back, slamming hard into the girl. But Silas took the brunt of the brutal thud. He spun as he fell. Closest to the shore, Catriona and Tom heard Silas scream in fury as he realized he'd been tricked. Tom looked down. It was instinct, a mistake. He looked down and the world smashed him in the face. The relief of discovering he was close to where he wanted to be was crushed as his twisted body hit the water. His free hand broke the surface first, followed by his right hip and then his face. Whap! It was as though someone had smashed his eyes with two perfectly fitting squash balls. He fought to stay conscious as the water engulfed him. Down and down they went, blind, Tom's eyes bleeding in the dark. When they at last hit the bottom, the punch of the fall was gone. Tom pushed up, the ascent a long life of bursting lungs. The muffled gurgle of bubble and surf disappeared as they surfaced. Catriona, a heavy doll tied to his wrist, suddenly came alive. She lashed out in terror and confusion. Tom had prepared the girl as much as he could, but ultimately she was lost, dragged from nightmare to nightmare, drowning now in a mass of black fluid, a sea of ink that had miraculously replaced mountain and castle. She thrashed her arms, jerking Tom towards her, the tape holding them together like loving cuffs. They were close to the shore, closer than Tom had hoped, and it was only luck that they had missed the rock that had sent the dinghy to the bottom in that fateful, long-ago storm. Entangled and almost blind, they sank again. Dark as it was outside, it was darker still underwater. The tide was out, but not far enough, and his feet found nothing but a shard of wood that could have been part of that shattered boat. He wrapped his free arm around the girl and kicked upwards again, sensed the change in her as she came to grips with where she was. Slowly, they calmed themselves and tread water. Barely feet away, Silas splashed towards them. Suddenly synchronized, the pair swam to the sound of the surf, heading for the jumble of rocks jutting into the water, pulling themselves hand over hand across its barnacled surface. Silas drove in from the left, pushing them around the wrong side of the rock, away from the cottage. Closer to the shore now, the swell bobbed them up and down in deceptively gentle waves that crashed 10 meters away against the shore. Difficult to see, Tom knew from countless childhood swims that he was being driven towards a cul-de-sac. He listened to the sea whoosh and swirl in and out of the V-shaped trap. There was one spot they might climb, a small bulge jutting from the outcrop they now moved along. Alone, he could scale it with difficulty. Tethered to the girl, it would not be easy. "Wait," said Tom. Catriona clung to the rock, gasping for breath, listening. For Tom, activating the map turned out to be simple. Eyes open or eyes closed, the world became a surreal game-maker's dream. The rock shone an eerie bright blue, the night sky alive with moon and stars, all perfectly positioned for the time and place. Up to the chest in water, the view was limited, but it was the sea itself where the strangeness of the effect was most striking. Although the sky was a bejeweled black, the overall scene was of a strange daylight. Where he could see beyond the rocks, the grassy mountain behind Cregan shone green and brown and relatively stable. The sea was a dark wash of amorphous blue, a deep blue that could have matched the sky with a little more effort. It rose as it lifted them, smoky, continually updating itself to the best guess possible. Helped, Tom was sure, by his hearing, the touch of his wet clothes and body, and the up and down motion of the couple clinging to the reference frame of the rock. Real and unreal at the same time, the immersive map was nevertheless a godsend. The rock, drawn perhaps from his youthful adventures, was detailed enough to show the shelf that would be their exit ramp. Beside him, Catriona's face was striking, her beauty hardly diminished by the bruise her mind placed over her eye or the blood on her arm. Only her position was blurred. Tethered as she was to Tom, she looked like a beautiful mermaid in distress. Behind them, Silas closed the gap. He was almost invisible, a vague but closing smudge that spread over a large area 20 meters to their left. But as they splashed and clawed their way around the outcrop, Tom was surprised to note that Silas's frantic thrash was suddenly fading. Miraculously, it seemed, he'd missed them in the dark and swam directly to the shore. Now, razor-sharp shells cutting their fingers, they clung to the shelf, cruising between their chests and midriff with each pulse of water passing them by. "We have to free our hands," whispered Tom. Over time, Tom noticed that with his eyes open, tiny details plucked from the gloom, overlaid and sharpened the worldview fed to his mind. And now, black hair streaked Catriona's face as though cracks through her skin. She nodded, coughing salt water as she clung to the rock to steady herself. Facing each other, their clasped hands outwards, Tom brought the tape to his teeth and ripped at its edges. Tangy salt swamped his mouth, and, choking back a lungful of water, he wormed at the thing until the edge tore, no more than a fraction at first, and then, under pressure from the constant movement, widened and snapped.
"He'll go to the cottage," said Tom. "I need to get to my father."
Somewhere in Catriona's head, all this crazy stuff seemed to fit as though she dreamt the whole thing up and was now living the dream. She needed answers, but they could wait. All she knew for sure was that she had to get to her father before Silas did. Getting onto the rock was easier than he'd expected. Timing it perfectly to the swell, the boy scrambled onto the outcrop. Kneeling, he hauled Catriona onto the shelf, and together, as silent as their dripping clothes and laboured breathing would allow, they turned to the cottage in the distance. The door was open, its rectangle of light spilling carelessly onto the dark grass in front. He crouched down. Catriona followed. Tom was about to suggest going in alone to check things out when they heard her father's cry.
Catriona! Catriona!
He yelled. Catriona opened her mouth to reply, but Tom stopped her, his hand gentle on her lips, her breath surprisingly hot. Ahead, a hazy, golem-esque presence flitted among the rocks. As soon as he saw it, Tom knew it wasn't Callum. The movement was sly, sleekit, slimy, and dangerous. He had no idea if the man knew they were there, but they could take no chances. It was just possible if they could escape his notice, they would be able to get to the cottage before he did. But as Tom thought this out, the vapour that was Silas suddenly rose, solidifying to a brutal silhouette framed by the cottage. A black devil rising from the grave. Catriona yelled in fright, and suddenly, without warning, her father, his voice a rumbling menace, roared from a spot behind the man.
Move away from her!
Silas whipped his head to meet the sound. The sound of the man who was supposed to be crippled or dead. Callum was huge. He limped badly, scarcely able to stand on the injured leg. But he was mobile, alive. Alive and every bit the giant he ever was. Chapter 56. He outnumbered Silas 3-1. And Callum was one of the most formidable men anyone could imagine. But some instinct, some Pavlovian program, told Tom to assume nothing. Indistinct in the blue glow, he saw the swift movement of brown on brown, the shapeless but definite snap of an arm lashing out towards Callum.
"Look out!" Tom yelled,
but his voice was lost, drowned by a terrible cry raging from the man trying to help them. A flash, a crack of light ripped through Tom's map. Lightning arced from the glowing tip, scorching the side of Callum's face. Everything around them, the rocks, Catriona, Silas and the foul creature, was transformed in a series of rapid flashes. Tom's map was swamped by the intensity of the sudden light and died. Callum seemed to leap backwards, a succession of stop-motion photos. He plunged into the sea. Catriona screamed and Tom, blinded now by tiny forks breeding behind his eyelids, took a wild guess at Silas's position. He charged, feet solid on razor rock. Enraged, Silas turned to confront the boy. He raised the rod to strike, but he was too late. Tom caught him square in the stomach. They soared through the black air, over Callum's head and bombed the water. Tom tried to hold him, to grip the arm that held the weapon, but in the tumble of flailing arms and legs, the crash of waves, he lost the squirming monster. Spitting seawater, eyes pierced by hot needles, Tom found the bottom and stood. The world was black again, the map consumed by confusion, a hindrance as much as a help. He staggered to the water's edge. Pebbles rolled in constant cycles back and forth by the unstoppable surf. And then he saw them. Silas looming over Callum as he crawled across the beach. The sound drew him to the one-sided battle. Catriona heard it too. They reached the struggling pair as the rod lashed Callum another blow to the head. The cruel light, burning flesh, hellish imprints of punishing, pitiless pain. Tom and Catriona leapt on the man, but Silas, powered perhaps by insanity, rode an invisible storm that stopped for nothing. He whirled on them as he struck, the lightning fast and furious, and Tom remembered its power. It was not just the agony, not just the damage to skin and nerve at the point of contact. Its real power lay in the debilitating surge of electricity it forced through the victim's body, paralysing waves of convulsions that rendered it helpless, easy meat for the next blow. Floundering to gain control of himself, torn between wanting to help Catriona lying close by and a burning need to lash out, Tom pulled himself to the beach again, hauling handfuls of pebbles and stone. To his right, Silas continued to strike the helpless giant. Tom ran his hands along the ground searching for a heavy rock, anything that could make a solid, weighty weapon. He picked up the largest and stood. The smooth egg fitted easily in his palm, but it was light, and Tom felt inadequate, unprepared for the task he'd given himself. He was damned, however, if he would not try. Moving forward, his left foot stumbled on something and he fell again. Shaking, frustrated, Tom ran his hand over the cold object, and like a synesthetic, imagined its redness. He recognised the thing immediately, the feel, the memory of it. The fuel can he'd seen in the bottom of the boat, now another piece of jetsam. Staggering upright, he grabbed the thing by its handle, at last a weapon worthy of its name. Slopping about in the bottom of the boat, he thought it empty, but now the reassuring slop and heft thrilled him as though the thing he'd found was an ancient, deadly mace. With one smooth turn, Tom swung the container in a wide circle that would have pleased an Olympian thrower. He threw himself at Silas, the sound of crunching bone on his shoulder loud and wonderful. It was horrific and beautiful. But what followed wiped any notion of victory from Tom's embattled thoughts. Silas bellowed. Tiny compared to Callum, and much the same size as Tom, the man's mismatched scream was that of a wounded bear. Tom's momentum carried him on, and he found himself lying at the water's edge next to Catriona, the terrible fury turning on him as he tried to get up. Somehow, despite or because of his injury, Silas moved towards him with savage purpose. Tom reached up instinctively as the rod swished down. He grabbed it, fingers curling metal, the metal in turn spitting thousands of volts through his skin, corrupting his nervous system and out through his soaking hide to the black and bright earth. He wanted to get up, but couldn't. His body was useless, twitching, his legs a puppet parody. Silas struck him again and again, but as the boy began to lose consciousness, Silas, his voice malicious, all thoughts of escape focused now on revenge.
Not so easy, boy. Stay with us. It's time to watch.
Beside him, Catriona moaned softly. The man casually dropped the tip of his rod to her cheek and she screamed. Tom could not move, and Callum, barely feet away, was dying. Again and again the flashes of light, the sizzle and smell of cooking flesh tore the night apart. Tom struggled to move, but even as his muscles began to work, he knew that Silas had them beat. The man was silent now, prodding the girl like a child poking an insect with a stick. In the darkness, beyond the macabre scene, Callum moved. He grappled for a weapon, his action slow, his strength gone. He listened to Silas torture his daughter and knew that he would never stand again, never walk, never breathe the sweet air of freedom, taste the love of family he fought so hard to protect, and he would never see his daughter again, ever.
dreamworks.com.